day it's hard to see the changes you've been through. A little bit of living, a little bit of growing, all adds up to you. Every boy's a man inside,
a girl's a woman too. And if you wanna reach your destiny,
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-9636, also known as 855-915-WMFO. Spell that on your phone and you can talk to us. And you know you want to because we love hearing from our listeners. Find us on the internet, facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO, facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. Coming up later in the show tonight, the future is here, and your constitutional rights are gone.
I'm surprised it took so long.
Yeah, they're gone. They're just vanished. As of October, you have no more constitutional rights here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
So mark that on your calendar, October 28th.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
We'll explain where they're going and why, and why there ought to be a lot more public outcry about this. Than there probably actually already is. In the meantime, it is the last. Is this the last? No, there's one more.
Nope, one more.
One more week of summer.
And were you going to say the last Wednesday in October?
One more week of summer.
Yeah. One more week of summer.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Officially?
Well, then it's back to school.
No,
some of the kids are back to school now.
Isn't the end of summer September 23rd,
no.
24th or something?
No, no, no. Meteorological summer ends on September 1st, and the season the children know and adore is summer is over at the end of next week.
I don't
week.
Know if that...
If it's not
I don't
done
think
for
that's
them already.
Right.
Yeah, no, that is.
No, I think you're wrong.
No, it is. Look at. Go ask a meteorologist.
I'm going to Google it.
Call Harvey Leonard. And
is
say,
is he available?
Harvey,
do we
when
have
does,
his number?
When does meteorological summer end?
Mm.
And he'll tell you that
no,
it ends August 31st.
You know what, though? It's crazy. I was just talking about how, one, I don't know where this summer went, but also kids are already going back to school. And
yeah, too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon. It really ought to have a state law that they can't go back before the Wednesday after Labor Day.
And you know how much I love summer, but you know what? I'm ready for fall. I'm ready for, you know,
ready
sweaters.
For pumpkin flavored everything is what you're ready for.
Oh, I'm not, you know that. I'm not big on the pumpkin.
You're what's wrong with America.
I'm a millennial, so what do you expect?
Yes, exactly. You create all of the problems.
So many problems.
And contribute nothing. Other than that revelation, what's going on in the world, Lisa Nichols?
Well, today in local news, we learned one Massachusetts hospital is saying oops a few more times than it should. The number of reported errors in Massachusetts hospitals increased by 60% last year, in part due to unsanitary conditions in a Western Massachusetts dialysis unit. In 2015, the number of serious preventable medical errors reported to the state medical offices was 1,313, a jump from 821 in 2014. The hospital disclosed 1,313 errors that harmed or threatened patients, including 26 cases when a wrong surgery or procedure was done on a patient, 51 instances when a medication error seriously injured or killed a patient, and 446 cases of contaminated drugs, devices, or biologics. The increase in the number of cases involving contaminated equipment rose in large part due to a potential exposure at Bay State Medical Center. Bay State announced in April that 575 kidney dialysis patients may have been exposed to unsanitary conditions in their dialysis unit. State inspectors said this past year that the hospital did not thoroughly clean machines after they used it for hepatitis B patients. Bay State informed patients of the inspection in April, and doctors said they believe there's little or no risk to infection. This announcement followed Bay State Noble Hospital notifying colonoscopy patients last year that the scopes used during procedures conducted between 2012 and 2013 may not have been properly sterilized. Just under 300 patients who had the procedure that went to Westfield State Hospital were at risk for exposure of blood-borne pathogens.
We're not gonna blame them for the scope thing because that was actually a manufacturer's defect.
Good.
And that was an issue in.
But you know what? Unfortunately, we're looking at a hospital that is having continuous problems. You know, it's really interesting. If you looked at the Globe today, they were one of the first people to report it, and it has typical Globe headlines. You know,
we're all going to die.
We're gonna die. The world is ending, and that was, you know, the tag for it, and saying that it's up 60%. Well, if you actually look at it and take out the single hospital that is in Western Mass. We're looking at, for the majority, down 10% of cases of medical errors. So I do not want to say by any means that because we live in an area with some of the best hospitals that they are making continuous mistakes. But this is a problem at this Bay State Hospital.
Right. I'd say overall those numbers, given that we have roughly 8 million people in this state and people who come here from other parts of New England and from all over the world for medical care, I'd say those numbers are pretty good. But it's the one bad hospital that ruins it for the rest.
Of course.
Isn't that always the case?
You know, in Western Mass, it's not as densely populated. So there aren't as many hospitals if you look at somewhere like in the Boston area. But you know what? This is what your story is. The fact that we have a hospital that is running like this.
Yeah.
It's not that across the state, it just takes one bad apple to throw it off.
Yeah.
But look at that. As I said, if we take out that one hospital, we're down 10% in Massachusetts. That one single hospital brought it up to an increase of 60%. We have a problem here. Now, you know,
is anyone in the state actually investigating this or doing anything? Do I need to ask? The answer is no. The answer is no.
I like how you actually just stopped yourself.
And, I know.
But this is ridiculous.
Allow me a moment of hope.
You know, this hospital is a mess. Not only, though, do they not put aside machines for Hep B patients, but it's also been known that they exceed constantly their number of patients for dialysis. So there's only supposed to take 8 in a single session. But what they're doing is putting people in between every single station with these mobile ones. And I get it. Maybe the demand is far surpassed what they can do.
No.
Something needs to change.
That's not a demand issue. That is a putting profits before patients issue, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's all about the dollar.
And I would challenge the people running that facility to come forward and say something otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it looks like, is cram them in as fast as you can, get as much insurance money as you can per hour, so that instead of staying open an extra 2 or 3 hours a day, and paying extra salary to get those patients in, we're just going to wedge everybody into every bit of available space. Mm-hmm. And everybody goes home at 5.
And again, I say, you know, where is the state oversight for this? But you know what? They slap a few fines. They say, we're going to watch you, but nothing happens.
I'll tell you what.
I mean, how many people need to be infected? Or how many times does a doctor have to say, you know what? The risk is very slim to none that you might or might not have some sort of staph infection or had Hep B, you know, exposure. How many times does that need to happen?
I'll tell you where the state oversight is. Drafting Zika response plans, even though there is next to no chance that we're going to have endemic Zika in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Oh, is that already happening?
That's what they're doing. Yeah. The State Department of Health is busy working on their Zika response plan.
Mm-hmm.
Aedes aegypti don't live here. Okay? So unless other mosquitoes can carry Zika, not a problem for us. But oh boy, they're going to have Zika response plans.
Yeah.
Get excited. Get excited for the Massachusetts Zika response plans. In national news, new allegations of pay-to-play access in the U.S. State Department were dropped today in a bombshell report from Associated Press. Following a three-year investigation, AP reported that 85 of 154 private individuals who received personal meetings or phone calls with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton had donated as much as $156 million to the Clinton Foundation. 40 of those individuals donated more than $100,000, and 20 donated more than $1 million. Among those who gained access alongside donations were Nobel Prize-winning economist Muhammad Yunus, who asked for help defending himself against the Bangladesh government, and Hollywood agent Casey Wasserman, who asked for help getting a visa for an English soccer player with a criminal past, a situation in which Clinton aide Huma Abedin said she was, quote, nervous to get involved, end quote. Huma was nervous to get involved in this one.
Yeah.
Because...
Hold on.
Pick
myself up, Derek, from shock. Really, are you surprised whatsoever? And again, I can't have... Just the fact that hardly any media is covering this whatsoever. If you look on ABC, NBC, CNN, they're not touching this. AP did this, so you can't play this off like this is some right-wing conspiracy. No. We have Julian Assange coming out and saying, you know, all of his crazies about Hillary Clinton. This is fact. These are emails that we found. And what were the numbers again? It was 85 out of 145?
85 of 145 private individuals. So in fairness to Secretary Clinton, they did not look at the number of state visits. Because those were, and diplomatic visits, because those were considered part of her job.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't everyone that she met with while she was Secretary of State. This is a very small subset of people that she met with. She met with 145 private individuals who were representing their own interests, who were not representing a particular government. And more than half of those people, 85 of those 154, collectively, had donated $156 million to the Clinton Foundation or the Clinton Global Initiative. That does not look good. The optics here are very, very poor.
No,
because basically what this says is give enough money and the State Department will help you out.
Mm-hmm.
We all suspect that our government works that way. Some of us know that our government works that way. AP has been digging into this for 3 years. And the only reason it took them 3 years is because the State Department would not release Hillary Clinton's schedule. It took them 3 years to get that information. She has been out of office since 2012.
I think I read something where a Hillary Clinton supporter was trying to defend the fact that she was Secretary of State. So it's very much the norm for her to go, or any Secretary of State, to be visiting with these people. But exactly like you just said, these weren't individuals that were representing a country or a specific group.
Right.
There were specific demand, or not demands, but requests made from these individuals. Hey, I will give you money if you do such and such. And all I'm picturing is, you know, those scenes from Game of Thrones where Khaleesi's just sitting as queen on, you know, the throne. And the people of the village are like, here's my sheep, here's my babies, give me land. And it's like, I will give you this, and it's a trade.
By the way, the Clinton Foundation rakes in millions of dollars annually and pays out very little.
Oh, yes. But of course, we need to be reminded how many, I think I heard it a few times on the media, how many people were saved by AIDS in Africa because of the Clinton Foundation. Thank you. So.
And by the way, the Estee Lauder Corporation got some special access as a result of their contributions to that.
Mm-hmm. So, and you need to be naive and ignorant if you don't believe that this is going to continue into her presidency.
Oh,
you
think absolutely.
That, and, you know, I have no connections with Wall Street. I have no special interests, lobbyists. This is what the entire Clinton campaign has been about. This is what an entire Clinton presidency will be about. There will be all special interest groups going to Washington. Washington, and they will get what they want if the money is right. And if it's not, then it will be set up in these nice offshore accounts for when her presidency is done and she can rake it all in.
Your vote for Hillary Clinton, if you choose to vote for Hillary Clinton, should be contingent on the Clinton Foundation being shut down. Short of that, you should not vote for Hillary Clinton, because private individuals are going, and governments are going to have an avenue where they can throw money at her and get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Even Barack Obama is above that level of corruption.
This is what her husband have based their politics on. Nothing's going to change. You don't all of a sudden wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm going to be a good politician and completely forget about everything. No, this is how it's always been and how it always will be.
If you remove the Clinton Foundation from the equation, there is a word for what happened here, and that word is bribery. That's what this is. And this is different because Dick Cheney, let's bring up Dick Cheney, okay, serving on the board of Halliburton, leaves the board of Halliburton. Halliburton's like, we're going to take care of you, Dick. You're going to get shares and pension and all this other stuff. Thanks for your great work. We go to war in Iraq. Who gets all the contracts? Halliburton, okay? That was definitely a case of a vice president of the United States enriching himself. Now, Halliburton may have been, in some of those cases, the only company qualified to do the work. And they were actually doing something. That was a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Did Dick Cheney unfairly enrich himself? And should he have been removed from any planning, any involvement in any aspect of the Iraq war? Yes, that should have happened. That didn't happen. But the one out that you can give is that Halliburton actually did things. Halliburton went over there and built bases, mm-hmm, and built airstrips and provided security and did all these things. The Clinton Foundation, nobody knows what they're doing. This is money that people throw into a big pile. And eventually, Hillary looks at the size of the pile and says, that's big enough, you can come talk to me. That's what's happening here. This is influence peddling at best and bribery at worst. And this is unacceptable for a president of the United States of America.
It's a perfect way to put it.
Your vote for Hillary Clinton should be contingent on the dissolution, the end, the termination of the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative. Shut it down. They have no involvement in it whatsoever. Take the money. Donate it to Bill and Melinda Gates. Donate it to Warren Buffett. Donate it to somebody who will take it and go do great things around the world with it. But no more Clinton Foundation or no Clinton vote. That should be your policy as an educated voter. In world news, it gets better. It really, really never does. Turkish ground forces entered Syria today as part of the war against ISIS. Backed by U.S. airstrikes, a coalition of Turkish special forces and Syrian rebels armed with tanks and warplanes crossed the border to drive Islamic State out of Yarablus and neighboring border villages. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan pledged to rid northern Syria of ISIS after a weekend suicide bombing attack on a wedding party that killed 54 people and injured 66 more, with around half of the dead under the age of 14. Rather specifically, President Erdogan said the border needs to be cleansed, his word, cleansed, of ISIS. Cleansed also includes the Kurds. And this gets messy because Turkey is bombing the Kurds that the U.S. is supporting, and the U.S. is now supporting Turkey in this action, which, because Turkey is involved, is going to include the massacre of any Kurds that they happen to come across.
Well, because Turkey and Russia are now best friends forever. Turkey did inform Russia before they were going to make this attack. Surprisingly, they told America, too. What's interesting, though, about this area...
We sent warplanes. They went in under U.S. air cover. Mm-hmm. So we are complicit in this. It has our blessing.
We're getting to a point where it's just like, please involve us. Let us be a part of this somehow. What I was going to say is the area around this is really interesting because it's a pretty small area and a small city where they initially went in. But I feel like that was strategically important because this is a location between two very large Kurdish forces.
Yeah.
Now, before that, and between it is an enclave that is controlled by ISIS. Until now, that enclave in the middle prevented those two Kurdish forces to basically join together and make one big one. You know, so this infrastructure, it's really establishing this continuous Syrian Kurdish district that Turkey does not like. Very similar to the same one of the Kurdish region that's in Iraq, which is massive. You know, so this is pretty much why for years Turkey really ignored this. And according to American reports, this could be why Turkey assisted ISIS in moving equipment, allegedly, and, you know, really doing that logistical traffic for ISIS.
Well, here's what Turkey...
Do you think Turkey basically used ISIS or knew what they were doing as a setup against the Kurds, knowing that ISIS would set up between them?
Here's what...
And then you take them out and we can get both of them.
Here's what Turkey's going to do. They're gonna head south into that town. They're going to drive ISIS out of there, and then one column goes to the left and one column goes to the right, and we're going to wipe out the Kurds.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything else happening along the border that we don't care for, we're probably going to go erase that too. The United States should not be backing an operation described by a foreign president as cleansing.
Yeah, it's especially in the Middle East.
Cleansing is a term most commonly associated with genocide.
Yeah, with wiping out.
But we're so concerned about our relationship with Turkey right now.
Of course.
That President Erdogan, who is smarter than everybody else in the room, is once again using it to get what he wants, which is victory in Turkey's war against the Kurds.
Mm-hmm.
And his deeply Islamic state.
And I think that's why he and Putin get along so well and get this whole game, especially what's going on in the Middle East, because they are both very strategic in how they move. And it's, for the most part, they are sitting back on the defense, but have an offensive move already in their back pocket.
I don't think Putin really gives a hoot one way or another. It's a way to stick his finger in the eye of the United States.
I only say that because we're at the point where Russia is so much involved in the Middle East,
yeah,
and they're really setting that footprint, especially in Turkey area, but Syria.
But Russia's involvement, as we've explained in the past on this program, is all about curbing Islamic
ISIS.
Extremism.
Yes, to go into...
Because of the Chechen problem.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia has a very serious Chechen problem. Keeping a lid on ISIS prevents that ideology from spreading to Chechnya and getting established there. Because, believe me, if you had Chechnya full of ISIS extremists, you would have bombs going off in major cities in Russia and carnage on an unimaginable scale every other day.
Do you think that's the only sole goal now of Russia, basically to prevent the Chechens from coming in? Or do they understand their role now on the grander scale, being in the Middle East and what they've stepped up and started moving along, especially with the relations of Turkey?
Russia is, on the one hand, trying to keep the Chechens under control and to keep Islamic extremism from spreading into Russia. The other thing is just simply projecting power and saying, we can do this. We don't need the U.S.'s permission. We don't need China's permission. We are a global power as well, and we will involve ourselves as we see fit. A stronger United States president might have kept a check on this, but we don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, in the broader scheme of things, I tend to find the whole animosity toward Russia very outdated and very useless in this modern age. The people who are still clamoring about communism and clamoring about Russia are living in an era that is 50 years old. And there are a lot of them around the Clinton campaign, by the way. Donald Trump's pretty cozy with the Russians. And Hillary, by the way, tried to be cozy with the Russians, did it the wrong way.
Nope, they weren't having it.
Okay, Barack Obama tried to be cozy with the Russians. They go into the annex Crimea, and suddenly it's 1966 all over again. It is not 1966. What's happening in Russia has changed profoundly since then. Is the KGB still very powerful over there? Yes. Is there still rampant corruption in their government? How is that different from China or the United States? They have the same problems as everybody else.
But everybody points the fingers to Russia and says how bad they are.
Russia is a convenient bad guy for everyone. Because we can't...
Because it always has been.
We can't...
So it has that rhetoric. It's...
We can't call China the bad guy. Because when you call China the bad guy, China gets offended and threatens to cut off U.S. access to the Chinese market.
Yep.
Russia won't do that. Russia will put up with the occasional...
That is 100% true.
Russia will put up with the occasional embargo. Mm-hmm. China's hacking our systems daily.
It got to the point where the only thing that the world could do is to ban Russian athletes. That's all. That was our way to get back at them.
Which was, as I have explained all through this year, a purely political mm-hmm. move. That's now, all it was. It was a political move.
Now, my question to you, what do you think the next steps is going to be with what is happening in this area? Are there going to be continuous attacks from the Turkish forces? Or do you think we're going to get into a bigger area? Because, as I said, right now we are in a small, really concentrated area. It's densely populated by both the Kurds and ISIS. We know where ISIS is for the majority. And I think at some point it's going to be pretty clear, especially to Americans, who they're going after.
I think Erdogan just wants to go in and create a 10-mile DMZ on the Turkey-Syrian border so that none of these ISIS clowns can get in there and blow anybody else up.
Mm-hmm.
That country is still on edge after the coup. Erdogan needs to show that he's in control. Erdogan needs to show that he's protecting the people. Otherwise, sympathies start to flow back toward the people involved in the coup. So this is an existential problem for him. If this gets protracted, if the Kurds decide to dig in and fight the Turks, now we have Turkey on the doorstep of Europe getting pulled into this conflict in Syria. That is a very, very bad thing.
And the relations between Turkey and Europe are already pretty bad. I mean, just the fact of what's going on with the migration. And there were rumors for so long about talking with Turkey going into the EU.
But as a NATO...
I mean, it's not going to happen.
But Turkey, keep in mind, is a member of NATO.
Mm-hmm.
And as a member of NATO, if Turkey gets bogged down in Syria, Turkey can turn around and say, hey, United Kingdom, hey, France, hey, Germany, hey, Italy, hey, United States, come get us out of this mess.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an obligation to at least consider the request.
Absolutely. We have an allegiance to NATO.
So now you got everybody going into Syria and you got a real mess on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would get to that point before the end of this year. Everybody's going to try and keep this thing. This story, by the way, did not make major headlines today, even though it should have.
But also, could this be more...
On a different day, this would have been the lead story.
Mm-hmm. As you just said, though, Erdogan's trying to regain, I don't even know if you want to call it respect, but regain that power of understanding what just happened with the coup, and you had the country basically trying to completely pull him out.
But the problem that you have with this is, with the exception of Islamic State, which is actually there for ideological reasons, trying to take land, take people, and create a government, everyone else who is involved is either involved from a defensive position to try and stop the spread of it, or is there for to posture.
Mm-hmm.
Russia is there to posture. Turkey is now in there to posture. What's actually happening on the ground is irrelevant in that situation. These are nations that are jockeying for attention and position in the global community. That is a recipe for extended conflict, because you can always find a new enemy to go kill.
And there's always going to be tensions in the Middle East.
It is a recipe for excess and atrocity and needless loss of life. We're out of any sort of a tactical war. At this point, we are now dealing with a free-for-all with a bunch of nations who are trying to say, I'm in charge here. And that's not a good situation. Hopefully the situation calms itself down. But it's one that needs to be watched. Turkey's entrance into this, because this is a significant escalation on the part of Turkey, is a big deal. This is a very big deal. And if you don't hear more about it in the coming weeks, it's because Turkey achieved their objectives and went home. Hope for that.
Well, in sports today, we learned the last member of Bathroomgate left Rio. The last of the three swimmers, with Ryan Lochte at the scene of a Rio gas station dispute on August 14th that turned into an international incident, released a statement late Tuesday night, including details on the negotiations between his lawyers and Brazilian authorities. Jimmy Fagin said he was interviewed multiple times by police when he was caught up in the aftermath of Lochte initially telling news media that he had been robbed at gunpoint. Fagin said he was presented with two options by Brazilian prosecutors last week. Wait a month for the police to conduct an investigation or pay a fine. Prosecutors initially sought $31,500 for the return of Fagin's passport that would allow him to leave the country. When Fagin's lawyers balked at the figure, prosecutors raised the fine to $46,875. Quote, all parties finally agreed to a $10,800 fine. I was able to contact my family in the United States, along with my American attorneys, and we were happy and satisfied with the payment of the fine the next day. My passport was returned to me after the payment was received, and I was able to return home. Yeah, his quote was a little wonky.
He should,
but you know what? This is.
He should have called up Ryan Lochte and said, "Hey, you made this mess.
Oh, you know what? Though he was
send me $10,000 now."
That's what blows my mind. You know, when this first was announced, and we had talked about it on the show last week. This is when it first came out on Wednesday, and we were presented our listeners with two options of what actually happened.
Yeah,
they were held at gunpoint, and Lochte, you know, was correct in what he was saying the allegations were, or he completely lied, falsified reports, and Brazil's like, nope, not going to get away with that. You're not going to make us look stupid. Come to find out, Lochte lied and embellished the story. What's really interesting, though, is the minute we found out that, American media jumped on that so quickly because there is nothing more than what Americans and American media loves to knock down, whether it be a swimmer, any athlete, a superstar, singer. That's just the MO, because we knock people down so we can pull them back up and they have the great return.
Yeah, but this idiot created an international incident during the Olympics.
But there's still...
That is the first time in my lifetime, even when they were doing the Black Power salute in 1972 in Munich, that didn't create an international incident. That just upset the U.S. Olympic Committee. This was an international incident. Diplomats were talking to other diplomats because Brazil was that angry about this.
No, but there's still so many questions that circle it. A USA Today Sports released a report and saying they actually went to the bathroom. And if you look at any of the pictures from the bathroom, it's one of those ones, even if you didn't have to touch anything, you wouldn't want to go in. I've seen bathrooms like that, like in Mexico.
Can I tell you something? The only people...
But what
the only people less the only person less reliable than USA Today is Ryan Lochte, as far as this story goes. I don't want to hear anything those idiots have to say, because that is a joke of a news organization. They were good for about 5 minutes a year ago.
No, what I'm trying to say, though, in what their reporting was, and they basically had a videographer go down and take pictures of what the supposed damage was, which wasn't even there. They said they tore down something. It was still there. I guess nobody knows what happened except for the swimmers there. But I do have to agree with you. You did create this during the Olympics. And I can't give you a pass and say, yeah, you thought that it wouldn't blow up to the way it did. What did you think would happen? Understanding, you need to be incredibly dense and naive of what the situation's going on. And any small story that media across the globe could jump on to even put a worse light on the Rio Olympics than it already is. But no, you're drunk and, a mess. But I can see where American media instantly jumped on that and said, look at all the drunk Americans running around.
But the thing is, it wasn't even Lochte that started the story. He called his mother and said this had happened, and his mother called the media. So the next morning, Lochte has a choice. Monday morning, Lochte has a choice. I can go keep up the lie and talk to NBC.
Why would you call your mother and lie?
Or I can keep a low profile. What does he do?
So when it even
he
makes
walked
some
into NBC and he lied. He lied to his mother. He lied to NBC.
Yeah, how many interviews did he do? Not only with authorities, but on broadcast.
But those are two big ones. Mm-hmm. Those are two big ones. I'd say lying to your mother is worse than lying to the American people.
You're bad enough that you're lying.
Yeah.
But then you call up your mother and elaborate on this fabricated story.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It's very bad. It makes us look awful.
And, you know, in the past couple of days, he's been dropped by huge accounts. And, you know, people questioning, is it that big of a deal to lose it? Well, yeah. Would you want somebody that you are funneling millions of dollars to represent your company, represent your brand, wear it all over you while you're swimming? You know, Speedo being the biggest one. Do you want that representing? No, you're going to spend your money elsewhere.
Right. WMFO Medford, I have to say that. I mean, Ryan Lochte has made himself... The thing about the Olympics is we all knew the jocks in high school, and we all knew that there were a lot of bros among the jocks in high school who were just kind of meathead, good time guys, partying with their friends, picking on the smaller kids, all the rest of that. We never get that impression of our U.S. athletes at the Olympics. At the Olympics, we get the impression that our athletes are sincere, hardworking, kind people. And then Ryan Lochte goes out and behaves like a bro and lies like a bro and acts like a bro and tries to dodge responsibility like a bro, and the American people turn on him.
Mm-hmm.
As well they should.
And look at what the American athletes did in Rio. It's amazing. And the stories that came out of it. Look at just overall the accomplishments that the swim teams did. Look at Michael Phelps. Look at Biles. There's so many stories that could be highlighted by American athletes. But no, Ryan Lochte, you successfully made this about you.
What's more impressive to me than the United States is that Great Britain, a country that has a third of our population, less than a third of our population. They got about 86 million over there. We've got 300. Got half as many medals as we did and was second in gold medals. China, which has over a billion people, about a billion three, I believe, was third. That says something about what happens in the United States and Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that happens is a lot of the world's best athletes from very poor nations come to both of these countries because they know they will get sponsorship and support and great training.
Mm-hmm.
You watch track and field, and it doesn't matter what country the athlete is from. They've trained at USC. They've trained at Nebraska if they're swimmers. They've trained at University of Florida or Florida State. They've all gone to American universities and mastered their skills there, or they've gone to the United Kingdom. And they've trained there. Going up against countries that have state-sponsored programs, because Russia was number four. China and Russia basically drill these people to death, especially...
Like actual death.
Diving. Diving is the best example.
Forget it. If you fall off that balance beam.
Yeah. Diving is the best example because the Chinese divers are untouchable in how perfect they are.
And it's amazing to watch.
And yet, in every other sport, they're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And they're struggling against the United States and the United Kingdom.
They've always been incredibly strong, though, in gymnastics. And but it carries the same precision. I mean, if you look at, you know, a Japanese male gymnast competing, whether it be on the parallel bar, it's unbelievable to watch the precision and, you know, doesn't move. It's crazy. And there was actually another really interesting statistic. If you took out all the women that won medals, they would come in third country-wise, and they were their own country. So,
women
congratulations.
Women aren't their own country. They're part of the...
We try to make ourselves our own country. But
here's an interesting statistic. Stanford, 27 medals among people who had attended Stanford. California...
Huge swim team.
22.
Gymnastics.
USC, 21. And Florida and Texas tied at 13 each. So that gives you an idea of how
both
many
of those schools, track and field.
Yeah, how many of the world's top athletes are coming to the United States?
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive.
Today in food news, we learn the U.S. government is about to take care of America's massive cheese problem. And may I just say, there, an abundance of cheese is not a problem. The USDA is buying 11 million pounds, that's $20 million worth of cheese, to combat a 30-year high cheese surplus, which has led to stalled marketplace and a 35% drop in revenues for dairy producers. This is the largest payment since a program was started 2.5 years ago by the USDA. The cheese will be distributed to food banks across the country and provide to families in need across the country through the USDA Nutrition Assistance Program. The surplus led Congress, the National Farmers Union, the American Farm Bureau, and the National Milk Producers Federation to request that the USDA make the purchase. Quote, "We understand that the nation's dairy producers are experiencing challenges due to the market conditions that the food banks and food banks continue to see strong demand for assistance. The commodity purchase is part of a robust, comprehensive safety net that will help reduce a cheese surplus that is at a 30-year high, at the same time moving a high-protein food to the tables of those most in need." And that was said by Agricultural Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Good old Tom Vilsack.
I was going to say, we talk a lot about
Tom Vilsack is the man.
You know, this actually isn't the first time the U.S. Has reported this growing cheese surplus. They mentioned it in April and really were looking for a solution to it. In April, the stockpiles were the highest since it was in 1984. I had no idea. Apparently, more than half of it is made up by American cheese.
Could we...
American cheese.
It's government cheese.
Yeah.
Could we... You've been to Wahlburgers. We're talking about government cheese. Can we stop making so much cheese?
Yeah.
Why are we making more cheese than we need?
Well, apparently people are buying good cheese, just not the American cheese. Now, although USDA projects dairy prices will increase, you know, low world market prices, so it's not just here, increased milk production, again, across the whole globe, and slower demand really have all contributed to this.
Stop. We don't need more cheese. Like, just sell the milk. Stop making cheese.
Well, people now, I think, with this whole, you know, health craze fad, people aren't buying regular milk. I mean, there are some people that are normal and drink regular milk still, but people are drinking soy milk and almond milk. And you go down, before you needed to go to a specialty store to get that, whether it be a Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, but now you go to any Market Basket, Stop and Shop, and your entire milk aisle is covered. You can't find the regular milk.
I think by people you mean millennials, and really this generation is just a nightmare.
It's not just millennials.
It's a nightmare.
It is. People that are stuck in this, you know, meal planning fad diet. Yeah.
Oh yeah, millennials. Because let me tell you something. People my age don't care anymore. We're not dieting. We're done. We either hit our goal weight or we said forget about it.
I'm surprised you haven't caught that bug.
What?
The burbs.
The soy milk.
Yeah. No, you're rational. I know.
I eat real food.
But it's a big, like, suburbia thing.
No, it's not a big suburbia thing.
It absolutely is.
It's a big stupid people thing.
No.
If you're lactose intolerant, I get it. Good. Go, you know, the milk alternative is perfect. That's who it's for. If you are a normal person with a normal digestive system, go drink some damn milk. Everybody's, think locally, you know, think globally, act locally, shop local, farm to table, farmer's market, man. And then they don't go buy milk, which is the one thing in the supermarket that came from a farm up the street.
Yep. It's true.
Stupid.
Mm-hmm. What are you
going to do? You drive me crazy is the point that I'm making here. I can't take it anymore. In technology news, this is different, but this is technology. Monsanto has withdrawn an application to sell a new genetically modified cotton seed in India amid a battle over intellectual property rights. At stake is a new generation of Monsanto's BollGuard 2 Roundup Ready Flex cotton, which has been modified to fight boll weevils as well as to withstand the use of Roundup herbicide. Monsanto balked at new regulations in India that would have required it to share the seeds with local seed developers, potentially infringing on patent and intellectual property rights. BollGuard 2, the previous generation of seed, is credited with turning India into the world's top producer of cotton. And I think just last year, Monsanto raked in about $92 million on seed purchases in India. So this is an interesting thing. because India is basically selling, you want to sell your seed here, you're going to share that technology with our guys. And Monsanto's saying, no, we're going to own this.
Well, here in, with Monsanto in the United States, they basically tried to put every single seed that goes in the soil on these grounds. They have to be Monsanto.
Yeah. And this brings up the...
It's wrong.
This brings up what I consider to be the real issue with genetically modified organisms, okay? I don't think anybody's concerned about GMO cotton. You don't eat it. It's not like your sweater is going to start dissolving your skin or you know, giving you strange immunities or make you glow in the dark or anything like that.
Could, Derek.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe the stuff seeps into you while you wear it through osmosis. Anything's possible. But the real problem with GMO foods, from my perspective, has always been the idea that a single private company would control the planet's ability to grow a staple crop. And that's what Monsanto's business is. Monsanto wants to grow all of the cotton in the world and make sure they get a piece of every cotton plant that is grown in the world.
This is what they're doing with so much, and it's not just the cotton. They want to make sure that every single watermelon that is grown in the ground, every single tomato that is grown in the ground. And it's the same conversation that we've had when we talked about the food. It is so wrong for one single company globally to have that advantage.
And this is,
so it's interesting now that we're talking about cotton.
This is what India is saying, by the way, is we don't think it's fair that you're the only ones that have this technology. You have to share it with us or you can't sell it here. India, by the way, is their number one market for this product.
Well, ultimately what happens, and especially if we're talking just about food, you have one single company that is deciding all of the seeds, or they're all of Monsanto's. They now determine price. They now determine regulations on how farmers can and how much they can grow it, and so on and so on.
Well, to a greater extent, they determine who can and cannot be a farmer. And that trickles its way up through the supply chain, resulting in much higher prices for the consumer at the end. And less biodiversity on the planet, which we know is bad for crops. We know that that contributes to catastrophic crop failure. It's part of the reason why the Irish potato famine happened, was because there was no biodiversity in the potatoes. So a single blight comes in and wipes everything out. We've seen this happen with other food crops. And we've seen this happen with trees. You know, Dutch elm disease. Go try and find an elm tree around here. You won't, because the disease wiped almost all of them out. There are so many reasons not to do this. And the one organization that you can trust, absolutely trust, set your watch by it, to do nothing about this, is the United States government. The United States government sits back and lets U.S. corporations urinate all over global rules, whether they be anti-monopoly rules, anti-competition rules, price-fixing rules, anything. It all goes to the United States. And in exchange, these companies that we enable incorporate offshore so they don't have to pay any taxes here. We are the new robber barons in this country because our government does nothing. And if our government is going to do nothing, then it is now the responsibility of other governments, such as India, or the United Nations, to come in and say no. And when it comes to the idea that you are going to have a patent on a staple food crop or on a staple plant like cotton, the answer has to be no. You cannot allow one company to control the world's supply of cotton. That wrecks it for everybody in so many ways that you could easily imagine without me ever spelling it out for you. This cannot be allowed to happen. But the U.S. government, forget it. Won't do a thing.
Nope. Because they get their money.
Yeah. Well, they get some of their money, which I guess is better than getting none of the money, because most of the money is going to Ireland or the Netherlands or some other place with a much lower corporate tax rate. Donald Trump says he can fix that. Hillary Clinton says, keep doing what you're doing, boys.
Line my pocket.
Works for me. Donate a few million to the Clinton Foundation and... we'll solve your India problem for you.
No one. in the sky. Stormy weather.
Summer, despite all appearances to the contrary, is not over. I should point out that it's 8 o'clock and it's dark out. Not quite 8 o'clock, it's 7:50.
So sad.
Here at WMFO Medford, and it's dark out, which means days are getting shorter.
Still a little light over there.
But last week I mentioned there was that little bit of fall in the air, and we certainly felt it over the last few days. Good news for you beach lovers and you sunbirds. Tomorrow, after a night in the mid to upper 60s here, tomorrow we're heading up into the 80s under the upper 80s under mostly sunny skies. A little bit more humidity. Good beach day overall. Temperatures in the low 70s tomorrow night. So it's going to stay a little steamy. And then Friday, before the thunderstorms break out later in the day, you can look forward to highs up around 90, lows around 70, much, much more humid on Friday than it has been the last few days. And then Saturday, we start getting back into the autumn pattern. Humidity is still going to stick around a little bit, but high will only be in the upper 70s. Lows in the mid-60s Saturday night, and then on Sunday, sunny, clear skies, high in the upper 70s, low Sunday night in the upper 60s.
Now, I hate to admit when you were right, because it happened so much, but yes, the first day of fall, meteorology speaking, is September 1st.
Meteorological fall?
Yeah.
Meteorological autumn?
I was thinking of astronomical.
I want to hear Lisa say meteorological autumn. Yeah, that's about what I figured. That's about what I figured. It is WMFO Medford. 855-955-9159636 is the telephone number. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, did you hear all the other stories that caught our eye in the news this week? Right here on WMFO Medford.
I'm Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with some tips on buying meat for economy and value. You can be sure you're getting both if you use the USDA quality grades Prime, Choice, and Good as your guide. When you see USDA Prime stamped on a piece of meat, you'll know you're getting the top quality. Of course, it'll probably be the most expensive. Choice is the grade you'll see in most stores, and it's almost as high in quality. Although good grade is not as juicy and flavorful as the higher grades, it's somewhat more lean and acceptably tender. It's often a good buy for the thrifty shopper. For more free information on meat quality, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250. That's How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
One second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to The Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. He's Derek Gary, and I'm Lisa Nichols, here with you every Wednesday night, 7 to 9. And as always, the way that you become a part of our show is you give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636. Meteorological autumn. Almost.
Meteorological autumn?
That's a weird word.
That's easier for me than
meteorological.
That's easier for me than Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Recep Tayyip Erdogan is really
it's a
hard.
Tricky one.
And all the Russian guys, forget it. Like,
yeah.
Here's another Russian general with a 10-syllable last name, Grunelishenko. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, you have the problem of doing world news, so the names are a little more tricky.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it's time for Did You Hear, the part of the show where Derek and I quiz each other by bringing up, you know, one or two words from big stories or some, you know, maybe under the radar, but we feel that you should know about it.
Yeah, and you already blew two of mine in the last segment, so way to go. Thanks for that.
So sorry.
I need that this week.
All right, I'm going to start. EpiPens.
EpiPens, you blew three of mine. Mylan, the product's distributor, is under fire for raising the price from $57 for a two-pen pack in 2007 to $600 in 2015. It's bad news if you're on Obamacare's bronze plan and have to pay $150 to $400 per two-pack. Rich people with real health care are only paying $30.
I was going to say I paid $35.
Yeah, this whole thing comes up because they upset a congresswoman.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, might be Klobuchar, but I think it's Klobuchar from Minnesota, quote, patients all over the U.S. rely on these products, including my own daughter. Not only should the Judiciary Committee hold a hearing, the Federal Trade Commission should investigate these price increases immediately. The commission should also report to Congress on why these outrageous price increases have become common and propose solutions that will better protect consumers within 90 days. For those of you keeping score at home, Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota co-sponsored a bill that made the EpiPen reserves a must in every public school in the United States of America. Therefore, she is part of the reason that the EpiPens now cost as much as they do. But Congress should hold a hearing. Well, when they show up on your doorstep with a subpoena, Senator Klobuchar.
Wait, so I already took three of yours?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we all did the same.
Yeah, you're a real problem. And just for that, I'm gonna hit you with the tough ones.
Of course.
Cincinnati Zoo.
Cincinnati Zoo, it's the 1 year anniversary since Harambe was shot.
No. That happened earlier this year.
Something with Harambe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Protests?
Mm-mm.
People are angry.
Nope.
Do I get a half for knowing that it was Harambe, the gorilla who was shot?
No, because it's not really about it's not really about Harambe. Well, it is, but it's not really about Harambe.
A little bit.
No, because your answer was it's a year since Harambe was shot.
It feels like a year.
No, it's been about 3 months actually.
No,
since
it
Harambe
wasn't
was shot.
3 months ago.
It was about 3 months ago.
Feels like a year. What's the story?
It was in May. A day after telling people to stop bringing up Harambe on social media, the Cincinnati Zoo deleted its Twitter accounts. They simply could not take the Harambe memes any longer. Basically, every time they posted something, people would post things about Harambe.
So now they have no Twitter.
So, for example, they'd have like a half-off discount day, and and people would post, you know, Harambe loved half-off discount days.
So bad.
What was this one? Harambe loved half price admissions. They did a post that said, if you think you have it bad, that wasn't it. I forget what the tweet was that sourced this, but admission should be free. Harambe paid the ultimate price. And it's just been going. So a couple of days
beautiful
ago.
Beautiful sunny day here at the Zoo Kids.
A couple of days ago, the
Harambe loved sunny days.
Director of the Cincinnati Zoo sent out an urgent plea on social media saying, look, we're still all pretty broken up about this over here.
Mm-hmm.
Please stop making fun of us on Twitter. Of course, everyone on Twitter just laughed at them and posted more Harambe memes. So there you go. Harambe, by the way, always supported posting memes. Harambe always stopped posting memes when he was asked to. And Harambe loved the big picture.
About so. Pesky's poll.
Pesky's pole is going to be reinforced as part of the Fenway Park rehabilitation plan sitting before the Boston Planning Commission, which has run into a couple of rough spots.
Mm-hmm.
Among the plans are among the designs are a plan to move the dugouts 3 feet further out into the field so that they can cram 124 more $200-a-game luxury seats in there.
Yes.
The Boston Planning Commission is not taking to that very kindly.